welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I'm deeply grateful you chose to share your little time with me here on the 20th day of June 2021. We're going to be looking at our daily bread. What does that mean? It's a part of what is known of historically as the Lord's Prayer, but really, what is this prayer and what is it really all about? Is this a model for how we're supposed to beseech God? Is that the whole deal? Generally speaking, people do not understand what prayer is, and religion has made sure you don't. Let me just say this. Prayer is everything you and I do in the course of a day. How we live is our prayer. So every prayer is really answered, as Buddha put it so beautifully. We make our world with our thoughts. So with the way we live our life and our thoughts and how we use them, usually as weapons of mass destruction against ourselves, we make up our prayer. To change your prayer, as it were, to change the way you live your life as a prayer, is something that would require a whole life change, a whole huge attitude change. And a lot of people just aren't into that. They don't do those kind of things. They don't make much change. What would constitute your prayer? Just think about it with me here a moment. If you took into account all of your thoughts, all of your deeds, the way you act and react, including all of our past and what we have lived and moved and had our being in, shall we say, in those days, what would you say is your prayer? Well, there's your life. That is your daily bread. And a lot of people miss what that daily bread is all about. It's what we nurture ourselves from, how we live. I want you to understand prayer is a very interesting thing. At least it is to me as a person. You can change your entire life by simply awakening to the fact of what it means to live in the prayer of consciousness, the prayer of love, and to make every act an act of compassion, forgiveness, and love. I don't believe that Jesus uttered this prayer as a model. I really don't, and I doubt its authenticity in many ways, but I do like certain parts of it that I feel are in keeping with the teachings of Christ consciousness. So I love this little radio program we're going to be doing today. And I get questions. Evidently, I brought this up in a commentary years ago. I don't remember, to be honest with you. But it seems to have cropped up here and there. And in the last 4 or 5 months, I have received some questions about it. So I thought it would be wonderful to end our weekend together here with this daily bread. So the first question, this comes from Richard in Colorado. We have a lot of Colorado people that listen. I'm interested in that. What is our daily bread, Greg? What did Jesus mean by it? And then he goes into a litany of feeding people who are hungry all over the world, blah, blah, and doing things that are kind. I'm all for feeding people. Believe me, I am. And I do a lot of work with my children. I call them my picker kids. Their parents pick our food, and they're often hungry. So I go down and make sure they have food every single week. And it's important. So there is that aspect of it, our daily bread. But that's not what Jesus is talking about. And you really need to understand this. Our daily bread is what nourishes us. Our Father who art in heaven, well, that's not something that I think he said. Hallowed be thy name, neither that. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. What did Jesus mean by our daily bread? It is what feeds us, not biologically, but psychologically and spiritually. What feeds you? What is it that nurtures you? I think you'll find it has a lot to do with assumptions and beliefs about self-righteousness, and even going as far, I think, as far as going into the whole idea of entertainment and violence and all of the things that people live, move, and have their being in, which is kind of a suicide, a societal suicide, where we live as a manner of getting our jollies, our emotional jollies off of the idea of hurting other people, going to the movies and watching the bad guy get it. You know, that's a big part of it, a very big part of it. And our whole idea of righteousness and vengeance and pride and vanity and all that other good stuff. This is all our daily bread. So what you have to ask yourself is, what is your daily bread? What is it that nurtures you? What is it that you need? I think people are very shocked in my counseling work with people to find out that they really are not the person they thought they were. They wanted to believe themselves to be maybe a pacifist, or maybe a peacemonger, or a kind of a benign person that doesn't cause trouble. But we do. And I think people find out through inner work that there is always this need, believe it or not, for conflict, constant conflict all of the time. And we pit one thought against another and believe that somehow this isn't going to affect us, or this isn't going to hurt us. It then is enacted in your lifestyle, how you live and approach people, without ever really knowing it. And then the next thing you know, that becomes your prayer. Your lifestyle is your prayer. So look at your lifestyle and understand your daily bread. What are we talking about here? Well, my daily bread is what I live off of emotionally, psychologically. I don't have most, if I'm the average person, I don't have anything spiritual going on. I'd like to think I would. I know people that intellectually understand things, but, and they call that being spiritual, but it really isn't. Your daily bread is how you think in terms of what is right, how you think in terms of other people and what they deserve and what you think you deserve. It has to do with the whole experiment of living your life for the sake of being comfortable, and how ruthless you and I might be about gaining that comfort. So what are we talking about here? What is this all about? What is the daily bread? It is how you live your life. And there is a great assumption, and I've talked about this many, many times before, so forgive me for my repetitions here, but it has to be said. There is a difference between your living and my living and the state of our life. Give us this day our daily bread, meaning there will be plenty of things in this lifetime that could capitulate into love, kindness, compassion, forgiveness. There are plenty of them. They're all over the place. And if you and I could recognize them for what they are, when people are doing things we wish they wouldn't, or are doing difficult things, or whatever it is they're doing that may be annoying to us, if we could live in accord with our heart, our real daily bread, we could manifest all sorts of beautiful changes in our life, changes that provoke compassion towards others as well as ourselves. It all becomes a great big bundle of love if you want to make it that way, if that could be your daily bread. But that would mean that you would have to stay away from the things that make you feel like other people are wrong and you're better than or right or whatever. I don't know what people generally think. I only have a broad brush stroke on it. I don't even like to think about it, to be honest with you. But if you have all of that, if you understand all of that, if you can move away from your biology ever so slightly and start to realize the blessing that could occur if you and I were to, shall we say, merge our life, merge our living with our life, then something could change. That prayer would be very different. Your living and my living is our lifestyle. Understand that. How we choose to live, what we choose to believe in, how we choose to believe in those things. And then there is life, which is the source of love that is our daily bread. And if you can merge with that, if you can move into that, you'll find your prayers are very powerful. I hope that helps you, and please forgive me. Namaste. It's a good question, and I'm very, very grateful that he had that. The next one, what makes up a person's life, and what is more important, body or soul? This is Frank from Colorado again, another Colorado. The body should follow the soul. That I can tell you right off the bat. If your body is in attune with your soul, then you will find that it is a wonderful servant of the soul and can do many beautiful things, move mountains in your own personal life. It will bring about insight, and your body will, if you are devoted prayerfully, meditatively, lovingly towards your soul, your body will follow, and it will do exactly the bidding of your soul, which is to be compassionate and to do as many things as possible consciously, in consciousness. That's what it's really all about, developing consciousness. But a lot of people aren't like that. They don't care to do those kind of things. They want their body to be separate from their soul. The real question is here, Frank, is does the body or can the body answer to the soul rather than its mortality? That's the real question. And that's a question I wish you had asked me, but I'm going to answer it anyway. So that's the beauty of this whole thing. Yes. The body can be a very beautiful tool of the soul. Extinguish hatred and fear and anger. It can do all sorts of wonderful things like that. When we devote our life not to our survival, like we do, if we can devote our life to what is beyond the idea of right and wrong, culture, society, we will build a new culture and a different kind of society within us. What is more important, you ask? What matters most? Well, obviously, they both do. If you have the soul and you move within it, it is the influence of your life. Your body will follow that. Right now, our bodies only follow our thoughts, our emotions. Our body is confused. It is constantly thinking in terms of, well, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? Because it has no leader, as it were. It has nothing to influence it other than desire, ambition, pride, and vanity, which is the ego, the emperor of all malice, the human heart. And the human heart is not benevolent at all. It isn't about goodness. It's about me, 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 me. It's all about my selfishness and my pride, my vanity. So what do you really want to do with your life? How do you want to handle it? Do you want to let love live you, which would be your soul and the totality of your life? Or do you want to just merely, shall we say, survive? by your wits, by your anger, by your fear, by your vanity, by your pride. How do you really want this to work out? I always ask couples that when they're in a fight or something and they come to me and they say, you know, what do we do? I always ask them to ask each other, how do you want this to work out? What's the bottom line? And then you can know what you're really dealing with. And what people are really dealing with is their human heart. The human heart reigns supreme in most everything we do. And because of that, we miss the heart, the real authentic heart. So, Frank, listen to me. It isn't a matter of what matters most, the body or the soul. It isn't about keeping body and soul together this lifetime. It is about the awakening to the soul and allowing the body to follow suit with that, allowing the body to follow that experience, to go beyond the beyond, beyond the ideas and ideals of intellectual precepts and concepts and, our pedestrian mentality. It is to be inspired by the soul. And most people, they don't have one. 90% of the people I have met in my life do not recognize their soul. Hence, they do not have it. They recognize their latitude and longitude in their ego. Boy, they recognize that ego. They'll live by that ego. They'll live and die by that ego. But they don't live in accord with compassion and love. They don't answer to a real higher power, if you know what I mean. Yeah, we just don't care. We don't want to do that. We want to answer to what we think makes our lives happier and more secure. So we miss it all. We miss the meaning and the elegance of what it is to live in a grace that is the perpetual love of our heart. We just don't care. So which is more important? They need to work together. But here's how it needs to work. First, the soul. You establish love within you. You establish forgiveness within you. You establish the quality of your spirit within your life. And then your body will follow. It will do what it's supposed to do, which is follow the authentic, follow the our Father who art in heaven. You know, that is it's just not what something Jesus would probably say, and I just don't buy it. That heaven lives within you, not above you or even around you. It lives within you. And until I awaken to the beauty of the soul, and I awaken to the lifestyle of that, I am never going to have anything more meaningful than, you know, maybe a pizza that I like or my favorite team winning of a game or whatever that is for you. I won't have anything other than that. And if you look at your life, what do you have? If take away the pleasures of your life, what do you have? Really, what do you have? Well, you're left with the soul. And that is the one thing that most people are least interested in. They assume they already have a soul, so they don't need to do anything to awaken to this soul. But that is not true. And that's one of the reasons why it is so difficult for human beings to find peace on this earth, even any kind of goodwill towards each other. We don't have it because that would require a soulful approach to our life. You are the soul in essence. Your totality is in the soul. Always remember that. It is not outside of you. It's inside of you, and you've always had it. So Frank of Colorado, I hope that helps you. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question is from our friend in LA, Kathy. She writes me often, and I'm always grateful for her questions. What does it mean to forgive us our debts as we also forgive our debtors, Kathy? And then she goes into that she can't really do that. This is such an interesting and simple teaching. I can only forgive you for what you have done if I can forgive myself. And I can only forgive myself in proportion to how I forgive you, no matter what. So when we're thinking about forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors, we're talking about a sense of equality, true equality, that I can't forgive you if I haven't forgiven myself. If I look at it deeply and I hold resentment towards you because you did something I think in my mind is against the basic principles of friendship or love or whatever, then I become ruthless. I become mean-spirited. There's a lot of meanness in people these days, a lot of meanness. And that doesn't go away with time. In fact, with time, it only gets worse. So it isn't a matter of things getting better due to the ticks on the clock. I can't forgive if I can't forgive myself. And I can't forgive if I can't forgive you. And if I think that I'm the hapless victim here, I'm wrong because I drew you to me. Whatever it is that is the pain of our relationship, it is on both our parts. I drew you. I made this happen just as much as you did. And I have to look at it and go, can I see the error of my way? Can I see what the mechanism was that made it possible for you and me to do this dance that we just did or have done? Can I look at that? Can I look at it with honesty and integrity and say, I'm as much to blame here as are you? And really, then to drop the blame and realize this isn't here, this situation isn't here to blame anyone. This situation is here for us to ascend into forgiveness, to ascend into the soul, to ascend into compassion and love. That's what this situation is here for no other reason. It isn't about what you did, what I did, what you didn't do, what I didn't do. It isn't about all that. It's about the ascension into love. And can I and am I willing to do that kind of thing? Well, that's where inner work becomes very important. Are you aware of that? Can you do that inner work? Can you realize, I know not what I do? That's the big one. Can I realize, I know not what I do? Can you realize, I know not what I do? Can you really look at it and see, oh, how I provoke, my lifestyle is in proportion to my fears, my hatred, my self-righteousness, my selfishness. Can I see all that? Can I turn that boat around and become selfless? A lot of people refuse to. I think everybody can until they come to that point where they can't. They come to a certain place where they can't do it. They just won't do it. They won't see the bigger picture, and then it becomes impossible. So the effort is to let love live you. It is to put love ahead of our little skirmishes. There are people you probably need to apologize to, and do it right away. You really do. And I'm sure you're afraid to do it for the fear of rejection and what they would think of you, maybe even admission to the idea that you were wrong. But I am telling you within yourself, it is very important, most important, to forgive. It is our daily bread, you know. Well, I hope that helped you. I really do. I have an upcoming commentary on this that will be around in the fall, so I hope you'll be able to read it. Have a wonderful day. Please forgive me for everything, of course. Namaste.